Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Joel and Tony, and we're here with more recommendations and discussions and advisory about all things media. We love books and movies and music and video games, and today we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about Swamp Thing by Alan Moore, which is a graphic novel, a comic book, and we're going to talk about the new Wonder Woman movie starring Gal Gadot. Swamp Thing is a graphic novel. It's a collection of what was originally comic books all bound together into one big trade, as they're called. And this one happens to start with issues 21 through 27, even though it's called Volume 1. And the reason for that is at the time they were publishing Swamp Thing, it wasn't doing very well. It wasn't selling very well. They didn't really know what to do. So around issue 21, they turned it over to Alan Moore, who was at the time not very well known, but now is very well known, considered one of the greatest comic book writers of all time. And this was kind of his first big get, was Swamp Thing, which is kind of funny because it's not a, at the time, it wasn't a big title. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a well-known name. And now Alan Moore and Swamp Thing are kind of universally known. So we read through issues 21 through 27, which is collected in Volume 1. Guys, what did you think of Swamp Thing?
I thought it was really neat. I mean, I was a little curious on how it like kind of started part way through, but I would say it just the graphic novel stands on its own as a fantastical kind of horror combination, and it's just really unique in its take on a superhero or the idea of a DC universe where there are superheroes. This is an entity. It's not even necessarily a hero. You know, it's an entity.
Exactly. Yeah. It's tough to put Swamp Thing in a box. Mm-hmm. And to call it a good guy or a bad guy, it's so original and so out there that, you know, people didn't really know what to make of it. And of course, Alan Moore stepped in and took it in his direction and took mm-hmm. it in that, not ambiguous, but in a shared kind of a good guy and a bad guy's clothing, mm-hmm. so to speak. That was my impression of the character.
Yeah, so it came from horror, right? Swamp Thing was originally just like another horror name. Like, he wasn't that deep, he wasn't that personable. But that's kind of exactly what Alan Moore did in these first issues. In the previous issues, apparently, there were, like, supporting casts set up and things like that, and he just threw all that aside and said, forget those characters, we're focusing on these new characters, this new story. And it's really the story of how Swamp Thing is kind of a hero, but a tortured hero, a confused hero. He's in a funny situation. He's not really sure, you know, what to be or what to do with himself and these new powers that he has.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, he's almost set up by Woodrow, who is also goes by, like, the Floronic Man, right? Mm-hmm. He's kind of set up as, like, a different type of... Because Woodrow seems more evil, seems more bent on... Right from the beginning, when he's kind of slighted by the old man who has the body of Swamp Thing just sitting there, he's okay to, you know, with the malice towards this guy. He's, you know, whereas the character of Swamp Thing is more like, well, it's kind of a force of nature. It's kind of uncertain of its own identity. So its actions right at the start don't seem like its own fault, I think.
Right. He's kind of lashing out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think he's kind of defined right off the bat by the bad guy, right? By the villain that they create with him.
Sure,
it's Winter guy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat. It's like he's you know, it's two anti-heroes, but then one of them's a little worse. So you
can that could be a tagline for almost any Alan Moore book. Two anti-heroes, but one's a little bit worse.
I thought it was interesting that the Swamp Thing ended up showing more humanity, even though Woodrow was jealous of the plant, of the organic, the aspects of the Swamp Thing. He was even more so than Woodrow, and he was able to. Woodrow was the one that was a little bit worse, but Swamp Thing had showed humanity, even though he had
this connection or whatever to the green,
right,
or to nature,
more, you know, plant aspects or closer to the earth.
Well, and that's one of the things I really found fascinating about this too. Is this that he could wax almost poetically about something that really you're writing about an abstract idea. You know, he's writing about our capacity for our mind to be connected to plants, right? Like. That's not really a real thing when you think about it. It might be written about in textbooks somewhere. But, you know, it's a more of a sensationalist, you know, superstitious type of idea, like a magical power. But he writes about it pretty interestingly. And then you visualize it on the page very vividly because of the dream sequences, right? So that theme continues throughout, because in the later comics of this particular collection, there's a demon that just comes out of nowhere, but then there's also this haunting, like, night terror of the kid, right? Mm-hmm. Which might be in his imagination or whatever. So,
yeah, so the art in the book, I think, is phenomenal. It's definitely dated. It hasn't gotten an overhaul the way that, like, Sandman has in the new Ultimate Editions or whatever they're called. But, like, this is still original four colors per page art that is quite shocking at times. It breaks the square panels a lot. It plays with the page. It plays with the format. And it's just a lot of, in addition to, like, there's a couple of characters, like, you know, Superman appears, no big mm-hmm. deal, but, like, there's these shocking demons and this grotesque skeleton and the body of Swamp Thing himself, you know, covered in moss and twigs and things like that. It just really, mm-hmm. Every time you turn the page, I'm just fascinated by the images. Like
the pseudo-dissection of
sure.
Swamp Thing's body. It's just
sure.
yeah.
bizarre yet intriguing and easy to read. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does break the panels, but you can follow through, and it's so easy to – you don't really have to work your way through the page mm-hmm. to figure out what's being said first or something.
Mm-hmm. Which is not a spoiler, by the way. That's the first thing that happens in the story is the dissection of Swamp Thing's body. But right. It sounds like maybe that gave away the ending, but that's actually where we start with the character
yeah.
is a dissection, is pulling apart the character and examining all the pieces, both right there in the book happening literally and then perhaps metaphorically as well, as they examine the body of Swamp Thing and try to figure out what it is. And they come to an answer that is maybe satisfying, maybe not. Swamp Thing certainly wants to know what it is, I would say, and has some connections to... So he was formerly a human being, and he's now this grotesque monster, and he kind of struggles with, like, how to cope with that, how to move forward in his life. And it's like almost a story of trauma and tragedy for the character, but with this necessity to act. Like, you don't have time to mope. You don't have time to sit quietly in the swamp and navel gaze. Like, there is danger, my friend, and you need to step up now. You need to get involved, and you need to make some hard decisions very quickly, which I think is, it's great for a comic book, right? If you only got 12 or 16 pages, like you want to get to the action. You don't want book after book of exposition, just a character quietly thinking to himself about what am I. You really need to get to something interesting. And they do that with these dream sequences and with these unclear elements of the world around him. Like, is this actually real? Is this in his mind? Is this in someone else's mind? What's happening? And with the notion of the green, which is kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a parallel universe where there's only plants, I guess, but you can travel back and forth. I kind of like that it's not well defined. Mm-hmm. That has come to define Swamp Thing now. Like, there are current Swamp Things where, you know, you are assumed to know about the green before you read the books because it's such a part of the character. I want to shout out to Stephen Bissett and John Total Ben, who are the illustrators, the animators, whatever you want to call it, the artists on the book. There you go. And I just want to flip through this book during the podcast because, like, every page is, you know, horror on people's faces and scary monsters and the majesty of Swamp Thing covered in vines and moss, you know, page after page, and a space station. All right, why not? Let's throw a little Justice League into this story and really round it out. Don't forget, he is a DC comic book hero, right?
They phrase it in later issues, I believe, as sophisticated suspense. Mm-hmm. So the style of – it is horror, but if you look at it in the catalog, it'll say horror graphic novel, but they like to call it sophisticated suspense.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's almost a thought experiment to try to think through the problem at hand and – is there really even a smart solution, or the immediate problem being resolved? There's always like this lingering kind of dread or lingering, the fantasy that's still lurking, you know, in the green or somewhere beyond where you can see. So
it sounds like we're all enthusiastic about Swamp Thing. We recommend this to our readers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely check it out. It's a different experience than other graphic novels that I've picked up.
Yeah.
Really, really strange.
Yeah, very strange, very different. If you want something more fantasy than superhero or more fantasy than modern, like Swamp Thing is definitely the way to go. There's a few other choices in that fantasy vein. There's Journey into Mystery. There's even a Game of Thrones comic book. But if you want something weird that you've never seen before, Saga of the Swamp Thing, Volume 1 from Vertigo DC is definitely something to check out. Any final thoughts on Swamp Thing?
I would just go as far as to say the look is just unforgettable. You can't get the image out of your head of just how you can make organic plant matter into a human body and have it resemble a face and so forth. And it's just, I've always found that fascinating. A very dark yet illuminating.
Mm-hmm. With the old art styles, the old four colors per page, pink, green, orange, and red usually. Sometimes they sneak in a blue instead, but it is a great book. And there's a reason they keep reprinting this book, even though it's been so long and it hasn't got an update, which I am fine with. I want to leave that art the way it is because it is phenomenal. So that is Saga of the Swamp Thing. Des Plaines patrons can check it out from either Des Plaines or from other libraries in the consortium because we all got copies from somewhere else. I think we don't have a copy right now, which is my fault, and I feel real bad about that, but we certainly had one before, so I'm going to have to go about fixing that.
And we also have a Blu-ray of the movie from 82 and also a TV series on DVD from 1991.
Excellent.
The Swamp Thing.
So, yeah, if you get into Swamp Thing,
if you want to go further,
go all the way. See the TV show and watch the movie and all of that. All right, well, we'll move on next to Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is the new movie in theaters now, directed by Patty Jenkins, starring Gal Gadot. Wonder Woman is supposedly the next in the line of DC films building its way to Justice League this November. But people know that she played a big part in Batman versus Superman already. So this is kind of more an origin story, definitely a one-off of just Wonder Woman and what she's doing. So it starts when she's a very young girl and it moves to her adult life. It is a period piece set in the 1920s, 30s, right? Or no, earlier.
World War One, right.
Excuse me. So the 1910s. It's kind of a fish out of water story, but I didn't feel like they hammered that point home too hard. They've done that story before. Mm-hmm. They don't need to do it again.
Right. Thor and all that.
Yeah. She enters this new world, the world of men, our world, and she encounters some very confusing behavior along the way, but she is single-minded in her quest to destroy Ares, the god of war, because she believes he's the one behind the Great War, World War One. So, guys, what did you think of Wonder Woman?
I really, really liked it. It was the kind of movie where, again, I felt like I was watching something new on the screen, like a lot of people probably experienced, but I found myself actually reacting to it in like strange ways during scenes that weren't necessarily like emotionally charged. Not like the fight scenes, but more like the war room scene, stuff like that, where I was like, this is just so cool. Like there's cool things happening on the screen. It seemed like it was challenging a lot of conventions just by the very nature of like the film, you know, a woman lead, woman directed.
Right. It felt like for lack of a better phrase, it felt like a coming out party of just this character, this wonderful character that's always kind of, I won't say underrepresented, but just maybe not paid enough attention to. And it was done in such a way that it really kind of knocked you back a little bit. And it was, as well, very original, no cape involved.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
And it was visually stunning
right.
in many aspects.
Yeah, I mean, even from the Amazon kind of hideaway world, that was at the start of, I think, a lot of the... But then it also kind of stands alone as, like, the war sequences stand alone as very intense and, you know, maybe not as much of a war movie as, like, Rogue One, but still very impactful, I think, and to me at least, you know, it was, like, kind of felt the sense of, like, sacrifice and the sense of, you know, terrible loss and impending, just, like, the unfortunate and harsh reality of war. And you just kind of felt it oozing from, because they didn't ignore it. It was the subject of the film. Ares War was less, you know. So it was a commentary, you know, over and over, but they did it seamlessly, you know.
It helped accentuate, too, the values of Wonder Woman's character, too. Courage in the face of that constant dread and that terrible thing. It's always a question, do you run away or do you run towards a danger? And I thought that the way that also that they filmed the aspects of what she could do as she was discovering what she could do. And, mm-hmm. and the bystanders as well were amazed by her powers. And I thought that was a really great angle to take in that film as well.
I dissent a little bit. I thought at times it was slow. I thought that at times it was a little obvious, but I really liked the acting in the movie. I thought Gal Gadot was phenomenal as Wonder Woman, as this great hero, and the different facets of her character as a loving daughter, as a confused newcomer, as a confident warrior. And she had to spin all those plates at once in this movie and go from fight scene to comic relief to, you know, sentimental, just mm-hmm. on a dime. And she did all of it better than I ever could have expected. And so I think that was a great part of the movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I liked the script and the pacing so much. I thought the ending was a little contrived, but I thought, like you said, Joel, the look was stunning. Mm-hmm. The cinematography, the photography throughout the movie was, it was kind of that Zack Snyder style where it's undersaturated. It's a lot of grays. It's a lot of browns.
Drab is what I was thinking.
Yeah. But I certainly do still recommend it, even though I'm not over the moon about this movie. For me, it kind of clashed with Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I absolutely adored, which was kind of the opposite. It was loud. It was thunderous. It was action-packed. It was funny. It was bright colors. This movie is subtle and endearing and careful and kind of pure in a way. Like, it's a human story of a woman discovering herself, discovering the horrors of the modern world, even though it's a period piece, modern for her. And it was really the action scenes were kind of a happy medium between, there was a lot of slow motion, but not too much slow motion. There was a lot of action, but not too much CG. I think only at one point I saw like an obvious CG scene and I groaned a little bit, but otherwise it seemed flawless. It seemed like practical effects to me. I don't know if I'm wrong or not, but that's the way you want it to look. Mm. And it's a phenomenal hit, which is great for the character, great for the franchise, great for the Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins. People had been down on the DC movies a little bit, and this one kind of brought them back.
Including us.
Including us.
We were down on the DC movies.
No, yes.
We haven't, I don't think we've really gone in at length about Superman.
Superman versus Batman. But I did not like that movie at all.
I didn't like that either.
And it really set a bad tone for Justice League. But this one kind of turned me around and says, all right, so maybe we can have strong human characters leading the way and have a good movie nonetheless.
Right. I mean, well, in Suicide Squad as well. I mean, where they had kind of a unique, you know, IP sort of with Suicide Squad, where they could have told a unique story. With this one, they really delivered a self-contained movie. It didn't really have a link to anything necessarily.
Which was refreshing on its own,
to
not have 50 characters making cameo appearances,
right,
because you've got a franchise to hold up, right?
Yeah.
Like Marvel did in Age of Ultron, which was just kind of a mess of, not a bad movie, but just strained with, don't forget this guy, don't forget that guy. You know, they were in a movie before, they'll be in a movie again.
Yeah.
This movie was just about, we've got a protagonist, it's all about her. And her relationships with other characters, certainly. There's the slightest hint of Batman in this movie, not really anything that slows it down or bogs it down, as opposed to Batman versus Superman, which is more like Age of Ultron, which is too many cooks in the kitchen, too many characters in the plot. So I enjoyed it. It's not my favorite. I don't know if I want to see it again, but I would recommend seeing it because so many people do like it. And I did certainly, again, the acting job by Gal Gadot, I can't praise enough. I thought it was phenomenal.
Yeah, so. I feel like there's a lot, too, to be said about the way they decided to make it set in like World War One times. Like, they put that culture of, you know, we are modern society, but there's this, we're flawed in the sense that there's this war and there's something that's just in everyone's collective mind. But then it was also like a, you know, a sexist culture by nature in the in Western world. You know, it was just so forefront to this movie and any of those social interactions. I thought that was like a way to kind of drive home that point even further, you know. So I think they did a really good job choosing that as the backdrop. Obviously, the Great War being the war to end, you know, end all wars, and it fitting in with the main plot. Like, I don't really even mind how it maybe seemed like a sloppy wrap-up. I feel like just the main core and content of this film, the place it spent the most time in, was really well executed. Mm. And maybe sometimes you kind of lose a little bit from the wrap-up, and there were some parts of the ending I did like, but maybe not the confrontation with the antagonist, you know?
There's one small thing I did not like about the film was that it focused on war and its evils and atrocities. And it felt to me that it was a little bit one-sided. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, the Germans were the ones who were inflicting all this horror, yet every war has two sides.
Yeah.
And it felt like the British or the Expeditionary Force side was not well represented as far as the violence that they inflicted as well.
Yeah, it kind of made sense because it illustrated her naive opinions about the world, just like Chris Pine shows up and says the Germans are the bad guys, and she's like, okay, let's go. And so, like, that's kind of good because she doesn't know the world. So, like, she just buys in 100%, like, I'm going to go to work. But, yeah, like, as a war movie, it doesn't well serve World War I. There is, like, a small shout-out to trench warfare, and then they just kind of move on from there.
Yeah, there's a few actions by Chris Pine's character that I felt, you know, oh, that explosion just happened and we're not supposed to care about the consequences of that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But here we are examining a horse that's been shot by Germans or by artillery, and we're supposed to care about these. And,
yeah.
But like I said, it's small, and they did have a story to tell. And I agree with that. It did show the naivety, but overall though, it was just, I thought it was a big deal. I mean, it's one of the top three grossing films of the year so far, behind Guardians. Well, actually, I think it's in front of Guardians, isn't it?
I don't know. I didn't check.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, it felt like a big deal when you go to a theater, like, 3 weeks after the movie comes out, and it's, like, still full. Like, you know, it feels like you're part of something. For some reason, you know, it's like, oh, I'll just catch it a few weeks later because you know it's going to be packed, and then it's still kind of packed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I still recommend it, despite I've got a couple of things I don't like this, I don't like that, but I'd still recommend people see it. Hopefully it bodes better for Justice League, which comes out later this year, but we'll see about that. As for Wonder Woman, though, if you're looking for a real character-driven story about a young woman discovering who she is and the world she lives in, like, it's pretty good. There's a couple of scenes I think are a little contrived, but I think the acting is great. It shot very well. The supporting cast, too. I don't know their names, but like the band of miscreants that they get together to go off to the front. Like, God bless those guys. Those guys really, really brought some comic relief. They drew out some more facets of Wonder Woman, like her compassion towards almost all living things, it seems like.
Yeah, I felt those characters really downshifted the intensity
of
the relationship between Wonder Woman and Chris Pine's character.
But right.
And it helped spread it out and helped her to, you know, like you said, just to examine different aspects of her personality.
Yeah. Okay, so Wonder Woman is not on shelves now. It is still in theaters. We will get it at the library as soon as we possibly can. In the meantime, though, we do have Wonder Woman graphic novels on the shelf. On Hoopla, the graphic novels as well on Hoopla. And again, on Hoopla, as I said this in a couple episodes before, it's the new stuff. It's as new as you can get on Hoopla. So if you want to read what's going on with Wonder Woman right now in 2017, you can get it on Hoopla just as well as you can get it on the shelf at the library. It's not some random issues from years ago that sometimes they put on these online services. It is the current and the good stuff. And then, maybe we'll talk about Justice League later on, maybe not. But for now, I think that's it for Wonder Woman, and that's it for the Pine to Click podcast. Thanks for listening.